Jake, welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Show.
Hey, how are you?
All good. We last saw each other in Colombia, right? In Medellin. Still can't pronounce it.
I think you did pretty good.
Yeah. Let's not try anymore. It's just embarrassing. And you have on your t-shirt there, it says AirBTC, which is sort of exactly what it sounds like. It's Airbnb with Bitcoin and property this time around. I know that there was some similar project back in like 2018 or something called Crypto Cribs. Remember that?
Yes. And there's many others out there as well.
Right. Oh, there are? All right. But anyway, let's just do the TLDR on you, Jake, and to give our listeners an introduction to you since you haven't been on before, and then let's get into the weeds of AirBTC and what that is and how that is going to change the world.
Awesome. Yeah. So I got orange-pilled back in 2017. It wasn't full orange pill. I guess I just took a bite, and I was going through some understandings about the central banks and how currency worked and all of these kind of things, and it brought me to Bitcoin, and I was like, I had my aha moment, and I wish at that time I had taken out loans against everything I own, but until that Back to the Future DeLorean ride comes to pass for me, you know, I think I'm kind of I am where I am in the grand scheme of things. I do love Bitcoin with my whole heart, and I think it will change the world. And it takes every single one of us to do that, right? For me, I'm an entrepreneur. I have multiple businesses and many things that I do, but Bitcoin is my main focus, and AirBTC is that main focus right now.
And how did AirBTC come to be? Like, what's the story there?
So my co-founder, Andre, sits in South Africa, and he came up with the idea in 2023. It really didn't come to fruition until August of 2024. So we've really only been live for, you know, not even a little bit more than half a year now. So we're trucking along. Yeah.
And how many properties are listed on the site? Like,
well, currently we have hundreds of properties worldwide, but it's like a curated selection. So there's many hosts that want to be a part of the platform and want to put their properties up, but we don't just accept anyone. It's not that hard of a process to go through, but we do want to make sure that you're getting exactly what you're paying for.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, I have some experience with Airbnb. Like, we a couple of years back, we rented out our holiday home here in Spain before we moved down to Spain. And being an Airbnb host was harder than I thought. Like, we had a key holder down here that was supposed to take care of the guests and stuff. And whenever he fucked up, we got the blame. And, you know, whenever the guest fucks up, like the incentives were all sort of weird in Airbnb, because if you as the host gave the guest a bad review, I guess you couldn't see each other's reviews at first, but if you complained about something that the guest had done, like not cleaned the place and not paid for cleaning or whatever it was, or like, because we had some really shitty guests that clogged the sinks and joint blunts were all over the house and stuff when they left. And that isn't too nice to come down to when you have a family, you know? Whenever I addressed an issue with a guest, they instantly replied by "fuck you, I'll give you a one-star review," and that's kind of hard to get around. And I tried to think about the incentives here with Airbnb and like how people are incentivized to act towards one another, and it's far from perfect. So, what are your thoughts around that, and what are you doing differently with AirBTC?
Well, I think it first starts with who are you actually letting in your house. Right? Like, we're in this community, and I know you know this as well as anyone does, that as different as we are as Bitcoiners, there is so many similarities, and we have so many cross angles that we're on the same page about. And we want to have a good track record, right? It's, you know, you're not in this fly by night. You know, I feel like that's more of the shitcoinery and the, you know, the other cryptos. It, you know, the Bitcoin hodler or the Bitcoin standard, you know, these people that are actually going through life on this, with this in mind, I feel like they just have better values. And, you know, for us, we don't let you publish right away. So let's say the guest had a bad experience. We actually inquire about what happened. You know, we have a hands-on approach. We want to know both sides of the story. We're not just going to publish a one-star review because the guest says it's one star. We need to know why, right? And we want to know your end of the story as well as a host, and the guest needs, you know, to have their information divulged as well. So, you know, we think it's a better approach. And I think it also starts with what I was talking about, where we have the right person in your home.
Yeah, this is so, like, that whole theory, I think it runs so deep because, like, it has something to do with Gresham's law, right? Because you don't really want to spend your Bitcoin, at least not in the monetization phase, because you'd rather spend shittier money first. Like, so you'd rather spend your fiat and earn Bitcoin, right? So people are reluctant to spend for that simple reason. Good money drives out bad, sort of thing. Or is it the other way around? Can never remember how to say that, but you understand the gist of it. So, but if you extrapolate that thought vector far enough into the future, where hyper Bitcoinization starts to happen and people become Bitcoiners to on a much deeper level and really embrace this for what it is, and this whole helping one another thing. The thing that happens, I think, is that your reputation becomes the next best currency. So, like, your reputation, you spend reputation points instead. So I buy you dinner, you buy me dinner, like stuff like that. Like we become more altruistic when interacting with other Bitcoiners, because we know that being good to other Bitcoiners can repay you in droves, like simply from number go up. I mean, we're all incentivized to help one another because we are the coins. Like we help Bitcoin by doing so. So we are helping ourselves. From a very egotistical perspective, it becomes good to be a good person. And I think this runs so deep. What are your thoughts?
I agree. I think Gresham's law is one thing, you know, but this toxic maxi huddle, you know, thing that people do and want to do currently, I think it's really bad for Bitcoin. And I think other people have started to realize this. And I mean, obviously, you know, you have Jack going on a podcast saying that Bitcoin will, you know, fade off into existence unless we actually use it how it was supposed to be used. I would 100% agree with that, because I think that spending and replacing your sats is the best thing that you can do for Bitcoin. It's not just for this momentary need to get rid of this shitty money, right? To go stay at an Airbnb or AirBTC, but we don't accept the shitty money. So sorry about that. You know, the idea is that we need to spend and replace, because it really does foster this environment that Satoshi was wanting to have happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I view that as like the whole dichotomy between store of value and medium of exchange is false. Like, it's medium of exchange over time and space. That's the narrative I'm trying to push, like my little hobby here, my hobby hill to die on. Like, the whole thing is, it needs to be both. Like, during the block size wars, people realized, the users of the network realized that it has to be a store of value or a medium to change over time, first and foremost. That is much more important, because it cannot be a medium to change over space if it's not first a medium to change over time. And now when we have the spam issues and stuff, and no one, and Lightning Network and layer two solutions are making like demand for block space very, very tiny, then we have the opposite problem all of a sudden. Like, it needs to function as a medium exchange over space also to actually be the medium exchange over time that it already is in the long run. Because if it isn't, we lose the decentralization and it's all fucked. Like, so... So I absolutely agree. I just think the dichotomy is false. But as you say, spend and replace, that's best practice. Like, if you spend your Bitcoin, make sure to make them back as soon as possible. Because the longer you wait to get them back, the more expensive they're going to be.
Yes, I mean, short-term gain, you could probably do some trading strategy. I think that's just a horrible idea. I think, you know, further this idea that people are saying, well, I'm gonna sell my Bitcoin and buy MicroStrategy because there's more upside and this and that. Well, you've just lost the whole understanding of why you bought Bitcoin in the first place, right? It's the fact that you have not your keys, not your coins, right? So I think it's something that people are going to have to learn over time, but I think we're going to have to move on this faster than people realize. If we don't have this spin and replace mentality, eventually we're going to get to a place where there's so few Bitcoiners, right, that have all the Bitcoin, and then they're just exchanging in between themselves, and there's no new on-ramping of folks. I think it's a real need for us to get on this medium of exchange mission.
Absolutely. And you know, not MicroStrategy's keys, not MicroStrategy's coins is also true. Like, there's, if you're holding MicroStrategy stock, it's like it's a custodian of a custodian, so to speak. Like, it's, and then again, as long as it works, right? But it's not risk-free the way Bitcoin is risk-free. Nothing is risk-free, but the Bitcoins are at least pure in a sense. Like, there's no random event. Like, the death of Saylor would definitely do something to MicroStrategy's stock, I think. If he goes, you know, hit by a bus tomorrow, then MicroStrategy's stock plummets. But Bitcoin is not affected as much, at least.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, if it ever comes to pass that Coinbase has paper Bitcoin, you know, this would be one of those other instances where, oh, you don't have access to your coins if you want to move them off the exchange. You know, I think it takes a lot of time and effort to hold your own Bitcoin. But it's one of those things that I think people have to go through sooner than later, because, you know, you get too far down the road, you're not the custodian. You're not understanding the whole reasoning of why we got into Bitcoin in the first place.
No, and this is so crucial, because the funny thing is, like, when you see Bitcoiners simping for politicians and stuff these days, it's like they're buying MicroStrategy stock instead of corn. Like, the whole point is lost, because Bitcoin needs to be black market money to function at all. So all of these derivatives, ETFs and whatnot, they are dependent on Bitcoin being for criminals. Because if it's not, then there's no value proposition, because then it's permissioned. And the whole point is that it's permissionless, that you don't have to ask for permission to use it, right? So, and I love that dilemma that these people must have, that these statists must have. Like, and it's very hard for them to detect, because when you want everything to be done by the book and within this frame that you think is the correct way to view the world, then it's impossible to grok what Bitcoin actually is, because it's dependent on people not giving a fuck about what the government says to them.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, furthermore, you know, I think you're kind of classifying all this, you know, black market Bitcoin. I think that's just regular people who want to take back sovereignty, who just
No. I black market is, to me, one of the most beautiful words in the world. Like, I'd say orange market then, but okay, black market is not a bad thing in my view.
Okay. Well, maybe we just have a little disclaimer at the bottom or something, you know.
Yeah, we can say that anyone who says the black market is bad is absolutely racist. Like, obviously.
That's very obvious.
That's a tweet. If you're against the black market, you're a racist.
Well, can you tag me, please? But I was told recently hashtags are out. So yeah. maybe leave the hashtags out of your tweet.
Yeah, I think the handles are still... But I shouldn't tweet and interview at the same time. I'm a lousy multitasker, you know. One of the worst in the world. Yeah. Even
well,
thinking about the tweet while
talking. Last time I saw you in Colombia, you were sweating and really going hard on the A minor.
Oh, that's a subtle reference. And yeah, a beautiful compliment/insult.
Like, no.
What was the name of the miner? Or was it a miner, like an ASIC miner? Yeah. Anyway.
You're funny.
Yeah. No, by the way, the conference was great in Colombia. I'm going to say Colombia instead of trying to pronounce Medellin. Yeah, tons of fun. So, like, if you can get to that one, you should, like, next year or so. Like, great town, great people, great conference. Small, but high quality, for sure.
Yeah, the signal was very strong. I was really surprised because the people that put that on, John and Rainier and the whole gang, I was just so impressed that was their first time doing it.
Yeah, same here. It was very well organized, like no real issues that I could detect, like very smooth. And in such a place also, it must be extra hard to throw a thing like that together in Colombia, I guess.
For sure. We're trying to partner with them to be, the preferred partner for the stay. So next time you book your ticket to go to Colombia, we're hoping to have, you know, a hotel system online. Kind of where we stayed the last time, but through Airbnb, and hopefully you can spend your sats and, it'll be a grand old time.
Okay. So they are going to function as some kind of mediator between the Fiat hotel and the super based Airbnb system.
Well, we will actually get the hotel on board. Right. And do the transactions on our side. We've already been in talks with a couple hotels in the area in Medellin to make that happen. And that's the next step for our growth. You know, as soon as we get the hotels on board, the number of offerings we'll have in certain cities just go up astronomically.
Oh, that's super cool. So, so let's dig into this. How does Airbnb scale? What if we 10x tomorrow and everyone wants to get on board? Like, how can you handle review curation and stuff like that? Does this thing scale?
It does scale. It just takes time and some effort. So, we're right now in this stage of chicken and egg, right? We need all the hosts we can get. We need all the guests we can get, but the guests aren't going to book unless we have optionality in certain cities that they would like to go to. So we're hyper-focusing on certain areas of the world in which Bitcoin is being adopted faster and faster. I.e., El Salvador, Costa Rica, Colombia, Madeira, Dominican Republic. But there's also other ancillary spots that we're really, our secondary focus. But we think it scales considerably through these markets because it's the easiest, it's the lowest hanging fruit. And a lot of people, I know you've been to El Salvador as well. It's one of those places where it's almost like Mecca, right? People are like, what's going on down there? Why is it so important? And then you go there and you're like, holy shit, this place it's different, right? You can spend your sats anywhere you go. You got a flat tire, you can spend your sats. You want a mango, you can spend them. So we're making our main focus be these circular economies. And we truly think that the scale will happen there. So we're looking to get around, 1,500 listings by the end of this year, which will not be that difficult, especially if we get these hotel systems on board. And, the users are a big part of this as well. So we would like to encourage people to go out and register an account and just go through the process and see what it looks like.
Yeah, so that's super cool. And I think it's the right tactic. Like, I think people have a expectation management problem when it comes to El Salvador. And the same thing was true for Madeira. Like we started the Free Madeira organization like 3 years ago now, almost. And everyone expected Madeira to sort of already be a Bitcoin hub when we did that. But there was like no Bitcoin activity whatsoever there. So it's like, no, we're starting this thing to push this and see if we can do something here. But there was like, I think there was one cafe in the entire on the entire island that accepted Bitcoin when the whole thing started. And now there's like 150 retailers that accept it and, some hotel services and the adoption is going well there. Let's just say that. But with El Salvador, I think a lot of people have the expectation of El Salvador being more developed than it is. I mean, but in that, I mean, Bukele has changed a lot, but he hasn't changed everything in the short period of time that he's been there. It's still a country that used to be a really shitty place until like 3-4 years ago. So it's it's developing fast, but they haven't gotten very far yet. So the opportunities there are like enormous, but you have to have a certain eye for it to see that, because it to some people, I think it looks kind of, some people probably find it kind of shitty because they haven't been to developing countries before or something. And I think that's where the misunderstanding of it is, like, and people accept everyone to accept Bitcoin, but that's not how the law worked. And that's not how this works. Like, it still takes education and stuff to onboard people.
I agree. I think education is core at these circular economies at scale, right? If you can't get the kids on board, because that's the main thing, right? Like the older folks, and eventually it's a hard door to knock down. And if they're not going to budge, they're not going to budge. But if kids working from first principles go, oh, wait, this is a better option. Oh, I do have an opportunity to save, you know, the hardest currency on the planet, and I'm not going to be, you know, saving cash in a mattress, and 10 years from now, all of it's worth, you know, 10% of what it, you know, current value is. And once these kids realize it, I think that's what it is. It's not about changing tomorrow. It's about changing years from now, right? And I think this certain expectation has to be understood by the people that travel there. And if you don't understand that, obviously it'll be something, a hard pill to swallow. But, you know, the idea that if things are changing, right, most change is uncomfortable, right? And when you're going through uncomfortable times, and that's anything in your life, it means that it's good. It's good. It's change, right? It's in a positive manner. So I think with enough time, if Bukele can write himself in for another amount of time, or if his brother runs, or if there's some similar understanding of the direction of the country, I think it's going to be really a net positive for the whole region, because people are looking at it. I mean, you see Colombian government going to meet Bukele and going, hey, what are you doing here? How did you do this? Right. And there's all these other opportunities in Central and South America. I mean, Costa Rica is bolstering now. I mean, you got Bitcoin Jungle, you got the Pura Vida technology guys. I think there's probably over 400 merchants in Costa Rica. That's, you know, it's amazing to see.
Yeah, it's absolutely awesome. I also think this whole, why it doesn't get the recognition it deserves, or all of these places, why there's misunderstandings about them, is because of a human brain bias that we're inclined to click more on bad news. And you know, FUD sells. As I like to say, and also negativity sells online, especially, like, that gets the clicks and the retweets. But when you actually travel around the world and see what's going on, and where and meet people and experience things, everything is much more positive than it seems from just your various feeds.
I agree. I mean, it doesn't get as much traction. I follow John Dennehy, and he's the Mi Primero Bitcoin guy. And you just see what he's doing worldwide, and what he's done in El Salvador, and how it's this open source technology of education where you can just take it and, you know, spin it up in Indonesia if you want, or spin it up anywhere you want. It's such an amazing thing to see, because I think it comes back to this, you know, you bring the children on board, right? And eventually it's Katie bar the door. Right?
Buongiorno, or as the Americans would say, buongiorno from beautiful Lugano. We here at the Bitcoin Infinity Show and the Bitcoin Infinity Academy think that you should take Bitcoin security seriously. And you do that by getting yourself a hardware wallet and do some inheritance planning. And how do you do that? Well, you go to bitbox.swiss and check out their hardware wallets, especially the new Nova edition, Bitbox Nova, which has iPhone support and the latest security certification and everything. So go to bitbox.swiss and check out their website. Use code INFINITY for a discount. Also go to the Bitcoin Advisor for some good advice on Bitcoin inheritance planning. They have a great multi-sig solution. And say hi from us. Good luck with storing your Bitcoin. And one day you might be able to buy yourself a beautiful house such as this one. You just have to, you know, stack HODL for a decade or two. And you could move here. Yeah. So back to RBTC. What about like the risk of exposing yourself and exposing that you have a house and that you're a Bitcoiner? Like, isn't there a risk there? Like, how do you get around that? And I think I recall you saying something about that the property owners have to put up a certain amount of Bitcoin to get above a threshold or something, some proof of keys concept or something. Is that right? Like, can you get into the weeds of that a bit more, please?
So, yeah. So as far as hosts are concerned, right now it's mostly Bitcoiners who are putting up their properties, but we don't advertise like what the address is. We're not, you know, after the transaction is made, that's when you get the information and the host will contact you and give you the whole rundown. But as far as, you know, in the future, we've seen this, you know, many people have brought this up to us. The idea is that eventually we're going to have non-Bitcoin hosts, right? And what we'll do is in certain regions, we'll have an off-ramp for those folks to either accept Bitcoin if they want to, or we can, you know, we can do it through an intermediary where they can get paid out however they would like to get paid out. So I think eventually what will happen is there'll be Bitcoiners that own properties that have them listed on our site, and it's mixed in with non-Bitcoiners. So who are you going to, you know, how would you know who to target? I think it's a moot point.
Yeah, good. I think it is too, probably. I think that people are concerned about this when they hear about a thing like this, I guess. Did you hear about the Satlantis project?
I did, yes. We've had many calls with those guys. They're great people.
Cool. So is the Airbnb BTC things going to be listed there too? Can you see them on a map there, sort of where they are, or like what's in the pipeline there? And are you collaborating with other services like that? Like, what's it called? BTCmap.org and stuff like that. Is there integrations coming?
There are integrations coming. You know, right now we are bootstrapped, which means we have low funds, right? It's one of those labor of loves for us. And, you know, we have a low time preference and we're not going to take the wrong investor's money, right? Who would like us to maybe accept Cardano or Solana or something stupid. So we want to make sure we're doing business with the right people. But once the funding comes in, which we are raising funds right now currently, and it's probably maybe a couple months away from us, you know, stroking that deal. But what'll happen at that point is we will be able to have an API that backends into, Satlantis or whomever. And we would love to do that. We think shining a light, I really do like the Satlantis project and what they're doing, because, you know, that goes back to this, be a good person, right? And this social thing that is also tied to Bitcoin. And we're very excited about the future.
Yeah, I see so many avenues to explore here, and so many things to integrate into a thing like this. So, is there an Uber for Bitcoiners? I know there's a Bitcoin taxi guy in El Salvador, but
yeah, the Bitcoin driver. He's going to Mexico. I don't know. I've talked to some different people. He's doing a lot of cool things, and I really appreciate that. And I think people should be doing as much as they can to try and accept Bitcoin for their services. But, you know, for us at AirBTC, our first vertical is the short-term rental market. But we have other things in the pipeline that we're going to be working on in the future to bring more services to Bitcoiners, like excursions and these type of things. And then also in the future, we see doing medium to long-term rentals and possibly real estate sales in the future, depending on the jurisdiction and all that would entail. But, you know, this is just the beginning for us. We're very early, and we think that with the right moves, we can really make a big impact for Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's great. So what haven't we talked about yet? Like we talked a bit about where you guys are and how this works. What else do you want to talk about, Jake?
Well, yeah, I mean, I really just wanted to shine a light on AirBTC and really get people excited. I think it's an interesting idea that people have seen our product. We don't have a lot of marketing dollars, so everything we do is really grassroots. So I would really encourage people to go out and register an account. And if you have a property that's already on Airbnb or booking.com or whatever, and you'd like to accept Bitcoin, to go out and register and try and upload your property. And we have a great onboarding team that will help. We really think that with our customer service and everything that we that's involved, that it'll be a seamless process for you and your people. And I just want exposure, right? I want to get from the mountaintops of people that put our flag up and go, hey, AirBTC, let's all do it together, because it's bigger than just making money, right? We are, and that's the thing about AirBTC, right? We bring, let's just say you're hosting a place in wherever it is, El Salvador, Costa Rica, one of these places. Once the Bitcoiner is on site, right, they're going to want to go and eat. They're going to want to go and take a taxi somewhere. They're going to want to go and see the mountains or the rivers or the countryside, whatever. They want to go on wine tours. And if there's optionality for people to spend their Bitcoin, they're going to do so, right? This spend and replace is, I think, an integral part of the Bitcoin user for AirBTC. And it'll only bolster the network, right? When we get it in as many sats and as many hands as possible, I think that is the future that we're pushing and striving for. And we want to make a difference. And we think that it's not just about making money. It's about this other part of making the network stronger.
Absolutely. Like the way I see that is it's that it's these islands of Metcalfe's law playing out. So Metcalfe's law says the value of a communications network is equal to the square of its number of users. And in Bitcoin, to call it the communications network is mostly true for these little islands like El Salvador, Costa Rica, or Madeira, whatever. Where if you just have a handful of Bitcoiners, you can do a lot. But if you have hundreds of Bitcoiners in a place, you can do everything. Like you don't have any fiat problems anymore. Like everything is, you can sort things out. You can live on a Bitcoin standard if you want. Like and it takes there's a certain threshold, but after that, when there are enough Bitcoiners around, that works out. And I think what we're the price of a Bitcoin somewhat reflects this exponential value of it just being a communications network. And so that's why not number goes up in the long run. It's because it's getting empowered by all of these, as you call them, circular economies, which is a term I have a bit of a problem with, but since no economy is circular, everything's interconnected. But it's a good term to use to describe a certain phenomenon anyway. So yeah.
Well, if you moniker the interconnected economy, if that's something that you can push and tweet out, and that's what we're going to call it, I'll do it too. But I think most people, it's kind of it captures the attention and understanding of most folks. And you know, we're super excited for the future. We really are. And we think that that's an integral part, this interconnected nature.
Yeah, absolutely. I see on your site here that some of these conferences are here, and places around all the conference places. So is that a deliberate tactic? And is RBTC coming to more and more conference cities?
Yes, we are. And we think that is the lowest hanging fruit, right? If we can find hosts that would agree to accept Bitcoin in these different places, maybe Prague or Las Vegas, I'd love, if anyone's listening who has a hotel in Las Vegas, please reach out to us and we'd love to onboard you. But yeah, we think that, you know, being around the conferences is an integral part of our growth, in the immediate growth. It also, it helps with the name recognition and getting this free marketing opportunities in these different regions. But, you know, in the future, you know, I see it being not just conferences and not just these focused areas like El Salvador and Costa Rica, what's eventually going to happen is, you know, if you're a Bitcoiner, you don't necessarily want to go or need to go to these specific Bitcoin adoption places. Maybe you want to go to New Zealand, or maybe you want to go to Japan, you know, and we want to have that optionality for them in the future. So after the immediate growth of these specific regions, we think the possibilities are truly endless.
Yeah. And also, like, earning Bitcoin is the best way to acquire them. Like, you don't, no KYC, no nothing. Like, earning them, like, then it's being used the proper way. So make sure to earn your sats. And this is a great way for normies who have figured it out but don't know where to buy, because I get a lot of questions like that from old friends and stuff who want to get in, and like, where can I buy them? And like, I always advise them to not buy them off of a KYC exchange. And then the follow-up question is always, but how do I get my hands on Bitcoin then? Well, accept them. Like, it's super simple. Like, sell something. This is how the free market was always supposed to work. Like, the whole point of money is that you don't have to trust the other guy. That's what money is for. If you can trust the other guy, you can just be good to one another. You don't need money. Like, so KYC is so weird.
I think KYC free Bitcoin is the future as well. And, you know, it's almost like, I would say hosting an RBTC is almost like mining Bitcoin, right? Your time and efforts are focused and you're accepting Bitcoin and you're getting rewarded for doing what you're supposed to be doing, right? And it only makes the network stronger and it gets people in these different economies, and hopefully the sats can just flow.
Yeah. And I love the initiative and similar things, like where someone just takes a concept in fiat land, like people are making money off of this, and we just turn it into a Bitcoin thing. I mean, jobs are, it's easy to make Bitcoin if you work for a Bitcoin company, but very few people can do that. You probably have to have a background in all sorts of strange areas that most people aren't simply don't have a background in. Like, not your average yo is not very similar to your average Blockstream employee. Like, that's not a thing. But the more of these on and off ramps for normies to earn Bitcoin that there are, I think that's crucial for like long term adoption, and also
for sure.
For
us, we think that, you know, most of these Bitcoin companies are literally just exchanges, right? It's just an on and off ramp. And most of them, you go to these conferences, you look left, you look right, and it's like, oh, it's a mining company or it's this exchange. You don't see real world companies anymore, right? Or at least I don't, that are in the limelight. So we're really trying to go up against the big dogs. And obviously, if we can take a tiny bit of market share from those big dogs, we really think that we have a chance to change the future, because it starts with these, you know, the Bitcoiner themselves, right? If they're willing to go out and spend and replace their sats, why not come and do it with RBTC? Why would you want to go to your Coinbase account, have to pay tax on your exit and, you know, your exchange, and then, hey, you're going to a different country. So here's a pain point, your foreign exchange rate. Here's another pain point, your credit card fees. Here's another pain point. Oh, your bank transfers. I mean, I was in Costa Rica with our CFO a few weeks ago, and we're just having smoothies at this place. And I look to my right and it's one of the banks, and there's a line. It looks like this queue looked like it was for the best sushi restaurant on the planet. There's like 150 people in line. I'm like, what? It's 9 o'clock in the morning. Bank hasn't even opened yet. And I'm like, what is going on? And then I talk to the locals and they're like, oh, this is how you have to transact. This is your settlement. It's like,
no, man. That's and every such instance is you're being stolen from. Like at the fiat exchange, at the tax man, obviously, but just using fiat and it being inflated, like all of these using. What was it called? Western Union to send money abroad or something like that, or Forex to change between currencies. All of those things are, none of them actually contribute anything to society. They're just rent seeking, all of them. And Bitcoin has like pointed that out to the world, that like all of these middlemen are completely pointless. Like this is nothing. By the way, I think the Medellin conference was very good in terms of the companies that were there were mostly actually doing shit. Like you guys were there, and there was this Bitcoin adventure excursion thing, and there was this coffee guy, and mostly like hands-on based companies. And I like that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. But I think it's conference to conference, right? You're talking about when we saw each other in Colombia. I was in the MENA conference in Abu Dhabi. Yeah. It was just fluttered with shitcoinery and these exchanges and these mining companies. And there was just, it was just the top tier people. There wasn't, it didn't seem grungy anymore, right? We've lost the grunge.
No. And I think there's a nice, I understand the dilemma that conference organizers have, because like, if they say, okay, only Bitcoin companies can sponsor this event. Like, okay, the next question is, so what is a Bitcoin company? And I know, you know, you mentioned MENA and Las Vegas. I know the BTC media, they view everyone that has Bitcoin, anything to do with Bitcoin, as a Bitcoin company, which means there's a ton of shitcoin companies that also get to advertise there. So like, how do you distinguish one from the other? And I think like a place like BTC Prague, for instance, has a much more harsher filtering system. And I think American HODL put it best in a tweet. He said, Bitcoin first means shitcoins. Like, that's it. If you're a Bitcoin first company, you're a shitcoin company. Like, either you're a Bitcoin company or you're not. Like, if you're accepting the other shit, you're a shitcoin company.
Yeah,
and
true.
There's a lot of truth to that. Then again, I guess, but people are businessmen. If they can make money from accepting shitcoins, I do understand that incentive. So if you have a site that sells stuff for Bitcoin in Europe, for instance, you may want to accept Monero or some shit also, because there's a demand for it, and maybe you can't run the company at all if you don't. But these are ethical dilemmas, because you definitely don't want shitcoiners to influence the scene and infiltrate and confuse people, because all they do is put up roadblocks on the way to hyper-Bitcoinization. They create these false narratives which confuse people, and then people get wrecked, and then they don't actually discover Bitcoin until 10 years down the line, like when they're forced to. Like, they will be forced to take the orange suppository instead of the orange pill, right? So it's not doing Bitcoin any good. So yeah, I wish they would just go away. Choo-choo.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of people that have bled in the shitcoinery, and then that's how they find their way. I guess you put it best with this suppository. But you know, the idea that you have to make a business decision, and I understand that. You know, from our perspective, there is no other way, right? We are not going to accept a shitcoin. I don't care what market we're in. Okay, if that market demands it, we're not going to be in that market. You know, it's just, we're going to die on that hill. But I think it's actually not dying on one hill. I think it's thriving on a different hill.
Yeah.
And we look over and we go, hey, you're doing all this shitcoinery. That's not for us. You can do it, but we tried to tell you, right? It's a hard lesson to learn. But I do, you know, the people I feel bad for the most is the people that need it the most, right? Because they have this concept that, oh, well, Solana's only $100. Like, maybe there's more upside in Solana. Well, you know, they don't get it, right? It's just a number factor for them.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned this, because in this latest book, there's a chapter called Hill to Die on Picking. And which we explain that, like, the thesis is that a hill to die on, a hill is only worth dying on if it also provides you with a valley to live in. Like, and I guess that's why you become a Bitcoin-only company, not a Bitcoin-first company, because those hills don't have valleys beneath them. They're just hills, and they crumble after a while.
I loved your book so much, man. And thank you so much for signing my copy. I love your work, man. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you, man. Love to hear it. And I would be lying if I said appreciation wasn't something that drove me. Like, forward. I do enjoy it every time I hear that someone enjoyed the book. I love that.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those things, like same thing with us. Like, you know, maybe your podcast isn't the biggest podcast, and maybe RBTC is not the biggest platform, but it's, we're putting in the work, right? Money or treasures or whatever, it happens after the hard work part, right? So you're doing the hard work, I'm doing the hard work. We're trying to push, we're pushing in the same direction, and you know, all better for you and for the network. I really do, from the bottom of my heart, I appreciate what you do, because I read your book, and then I'm showing my kids the book, and then they're like looking at the first page because you put something very personal for me in there, and I was like, oh no, don't read that part, you know, because it had a curse word because I mispronounced your name first when I met you.
Oh yeah, this is hilarious. I remember that now. No, but as you say, like the rewards are when you actually meet the people that consume your content or like use your platform in your case, then it's so rewarding. Like, we may not have the quantity, but we definitely have the quality, right? I prefer that I don't want to have a ton of listeners. I want to have the best listeners, and I do, like, or we do. I absolutely love the fans of the show, and we view ourselves as conviction deepeners first and foremost, not orange pillars necessarily, and not necessarily the most technical people or the most this or that. But I do hope that I can, like, hammer in some points about Austrian economics and how Bitcoin is the best alternative there is, and why there won't be any better alternatives anytime soon, and like remind people why they're doing this in the first place. I think that's important.
Yeah, it's definitely the network, right? The network effect. It's not, you know, it's not about the cryptocurrency. It's about the network. It's the largest computer network in the world, right? And it's strong, and you're a part of it, I'm a part of it, we're really doing Satoshi's work every day.
Yeah, and more than that, it's the largest network of good people in the world, I would say. Good, honest people, and that's what's so mind-blowing to me. Like, the computing power in the network is only there because a good person chose to run that software and buy all that stuff just to do that stuff. Like, I absolutely love that.
I agree. And you know, everyone talks about the halving every 4 years. And I think there's also this like shedding of shitty people from Bitcoin. So, you know,
you got your Slayer heroes. Yeah,
exactly. Well, not even heroes, people that were like, you know, I think the American mindset that, and this is SBF, you know, that the guy that ran his Bahamian company into the ground. But, you know, as an American, Americans see him and they're like, oh, he's autistic, he must be a genius, you know? The Americans
scam, are scam bonkman fraud, you mean?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So you know, I think it's good. We are concentrating the good people. And every 4 years, every 2 years, every year, every month, it just, we keep concentrating, and people want to get on board this train, and hopefully they get on the train before it's too late, because it might be out of reach the next time they want to, you know, get on board.
Yeah. Well, to a certain extent, I mean, I don't think you can be too late to Bitcoin. Like, of course, at some point it's going to be impossible to actually own a UTXO, but the, second layers and stuff, you can still be somewhat interconnected with the network. Yeah, and I used to view Bitcoin as an intelligence test, but I now view it more as an ethics test, like if you're an ethical person or not. That's much more accurate, I think, because shitcoiners can be super intelligent. It's just that they're dishonest assholes.
Right. And, you know, I think it changes every aspect of your life. You know, this being Bitcoin only or being Bitcoin standard, not, you know, or pushing to be better, right? It, you know, you want the best money, but it also pushes you to be the best you. And you know, it's always meeting people where they're at. Hey, I'm overweight. Oh, hey, I'm a drunk. Hey, I'm this. Hey, I'm that. But you can constantly change. You can change for the better or you can change for the worse. And I think Bitcoin enables this positive change that only will positively affect the network, which creates more good.
Absolutely. And I've seen it time and time again, Bitcoiners making changes to their lives and just becoming healthier and everything else that comes with taking back the driver's seat of your life, like taking responsibility. Like, responsibility is the other side of the freedom coin. Like, you can't have one without the other. You have to take, if you want to be free, you have to take matters into your own hands and actually become a responsible person. And I'm yet to meet someone who that has been bad for. Like, it's obviously good. Like, no one, it's like the meme with the caged lion at the zoo getting his free meal every day, and the proud alpha lion on the savannah, like Lion King's father, Mustafa's father, whatever, what was his name? Simba's father. Yeah. So, and which one do you want to be? Like, which way Western man sort of thing? Because too many people choose to be the lion at the zoo, getting his free meal and rotting away in a miserable existence. I mean, you need to do shit for shit to happen.
Yeah, you have to take your freedom back, right? I mean, I think of this back, you know, when I think I'm second or third generation from the United States. But before that, my great-great-grandfather came from Ireland, right? At some point, he goes, you know what? Fuck this place. I think there's opportunity somewhere else, right? And you know how much, you know, it takes a lot of bones, a lot of intestinal fortitude to make these kind of decisions that will affect future generations, right? And this is one of those moments. Just like he was about to board the ship and all of his friends are like, you're an idiot. You know, who knows? It could be horrible, right? But he took that little piece of hope. And that's what Bitcoin is for a lot of people. It's just a tiny little piece of hope. And if it works out, which it will eventually, it may not be tomorrow, may not be next week, but you're going to affect generations with making these decisions.
Absolutely. And I love the finding America metaphor, because it's true on so many levels. So like, these people escape the clutches of statism back in Europe to go to the new continent where they thought they had more opportunity, more freedom, right? And as statism grew in the US, they moved west. And the more libertarian they were, the further west they moved. And now there's no more left west to move to. So now the West Coast is shitty too and statist. But there's a new frontier, and it's Bitcoin. And it's the same thing. You decide to go on this journey, and the journey will take a while. It'll take like 3 months, just as it did for the people crossing the Atlantic back then. All right, maybe not 3 months, but you know, 1 month at least. And so, because you need to do your homework, and you need to, like, it's a journey. It for sure is a journey. But when you get to your destination, your freedom increases, and you have to take responsibility for yourself and your family and the people close to you, because there's no one else looking after you. Like, it's a new frontier in every aspect of the word. And so I think it's we don't kill Native Americans, though. Like, there's no native Bitcoiners to be killed. Maybe there's something there to the metaphor. Maybe that's the slay your heroes aspect. But I don't know. But there's a lot there. There's a lot there. And just like America, Bitcoin can only be discovered once. Like, it can't be discovered again. There's one new world. There's not another one. Like, there's nothing in the middle of the Pacific to find. Like, this is it.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, I think there is no killing of the Native Americans, right? But there is the slaying of your hero. I see that. I see that on the horizon, because I think some Bitcoiners are hardcore, like, hey, Michael Saylor got me into this, right? And now it seems as if he's like, hey, everyone, get on board with my, you know, I'm giving you less volatility. And, right, he's feeding the lion in the zoo, right? So I think there's at a point where, you know, yes, you come to this new world, but you're not, you know, you're not thinking, you're not done with your growth, right? Once you find Bitcoin, it's levels, right? It's like, oh, find Bitcoin, I'll buy it on Coinbase because it's the easiest way to do it. And then the next step is self-sovereignty and owning it yourself, holding yourself, right? There's different iterations. And I think it's an amazing journey that we all need to be on. And, you know, it's even at 40, I'm 40 years old. I'm still learning every day, right? And we should never stop learning, because once you stop learning, you're dead.
Absolutely. And Saylor or anyone else, like influential Bitcoiners, the way I see it is like, what's the ratio like in good things they do and bad things they do? We may have differences of opinion, but like Saylor is still net positive, I think. Like, it's definitely a net positive. Then there are people who do something unforgivable, like shitcoining, and then they're immediately knocked off that pedestal, and you cannot take them seriously ever again. So there's a balance there, and some people have dabbled in shitcoins, like, but if it was back in 2017, that's a kind of a different story, because like the narrative was different and stuff. I never did, but I do feel, well, pity is too strong of a word, but I feel for those people who fell for a scam and thought they were doing the right thing. And so like, not everyone is a scammer, like, but I do believe that all shitcoiners are either scammers or they were too gullible. Like they fell for something. Like there's no in between there. Maybe there's a curious programmer, but that's also in the gullible camp, right? Because they are developing on something that by its nature cannot work since Bitcoin exists. So yeah, but it's hard. If anything, I wish there was some more hero slaying going on in Bitcoin Twitter. Maybe it's because most of Bitcoin Twitter moved to Nostr or something, like or more the more toxic parts of it, and everyone became nice on Nostr because there were no hostile people on Nostr to slay. So like, yeah, I don't know, but I a part of me misses that whole 2017. Like, the environment was different, and the real maxis were more hardcore back then and more willing to slay their heroes.
And the risk was way higher, right? Back in 2017, it was super risky to want to even, you know, how are you going to buy it? How are you going to purchase it? How are you going to hold it? These are all situations and understandings that have been figured out quite rapidly since 2017. But yeah, I think most of the risk has come off of Bitcoin. Obviously, you're going to have big drops in the number, but one Bitcoin is still one Bitcoin, right? And that's what we need to understand, or the people who are new, who haven't gone through the journey of bleeding on the cryptocurrency floor. You know, it's one is one, and there's only 21 million ever. So, as soon as the faster people realize that the network is topped out and will never be any more than 21 million unless Larry Fink and those guys do a little airdrop. I guess that could happen in the future, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, exciting time to be alive for sure. All right, Jake, before we wrap this thing up, is there other than rbtc.online, is that the address, the correct one where you want to send people?
Yes, that's the address, exactly.
Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up, so we're not leaving anything on the side here?
You know, I would just encourage people to go on our site and to register an account and really understand what we're trying to accomplish. And, I think it's, on every single one of us to do our part to further the network. And we think that this is the outlet for a lot of people to do that. Not everyone can make money at Blockstream or get a job in at Square or wherever, or one of these companies. What they can do is, possibly further the network through spending their Bitcoin and getting into these circular economies and really making a difference.
Great. So, thank you very much for coming on. And listeners, go to rbtc.online to figure out more about RBTC. Jake, thank you very much.
Have a great day.
This has been the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Brush your teeth, damn it.